If many of you know the poet Ross Gay, he came up to do, when did he read up a Bowdoin, Matt?
Colby Bowdoin, last February.
So about a year ago. Amazing poet, and kind of one of those guys who has so many gifts you hate him. And we went to grad school together. Every Wednesday night in grad school, we would play basketball together, and that's actually how Ross and I ended up becoming good friends. We actually didn't read each other's poems until after he had finished his MFA over at Sarah Lawrence. This is about Ross. Beast. They call him Beast where he's from. And he will tell you that each living physical moment affords an opportunity to do something unique and beautiful. Now, clearly, this is a load of bullshit. You see, I first became acquainted with Beast's grunt and howl metaphysics at a dust-sucking half-court game every Wednesday night in grad school, when on several occasions, yes, I stripped the ball from him clean. Beautiful? No. That shit was ugly. And in the tradition of the many monsters who came before him, he did not cry for such ugliness. This Beast is 6'4" and speaks 5 versions of pound and pummel in South Philly. I'm watching him play summer league, where Beast thinks he's a poet even when he hauls down a brick off the defensive boards and there's 4 other black men on the court calling to him, "Beast! Beast! Beast!" He answers them with all the sensitivity of a cretic foot, a quick pivot midcourt that knocks the opponent's skinny two-guard off the gawky pair of iron skillets grown out of the poor kid's ankles and projects them like an old neurosis across the crud-ridden gym floor. More than once, I've caught Beast's blunt left-wing blade of his broad back on my chin and then with my best blacktop ineloquence cursed him. Thank you. Fuck you too. Isn't this so often the affection between men, that we should share not a single lovely word unless through a battered mandible? This is how I listened to Beast recite after those Wednesday nights his invented names for fire in such holy brag and trash, but also how one morning over tea, in a more muted bravado, he narrated the quiet trauma of his father's final weeks. How his old man, whose oak switch cruelty Beast had long survived, was shrunken down to a pair of scrawny wrists. How they yanked at the tethers to the gurney with whatever will he could scrape from his gut, already nearing the end to its slow cook from his gut. Beast's father, conjuring one last good ass-whooping glare, would shake his head, pointing to his own mouth. He was signaling his son to remove the ventilator tube shoved a full foot down his rotting neck, every nerve in his failing body yowling soundlessly, "No, not this. I don't want this. Take the goddamn thing out." And Beast dutifully answered the way any noble animal must answer its closest kin, with his body, with the dangerous radius of his shoulders, with his muscled trunk, and with his breath. He watched the last of his father's silent, wide-eyed squawks and enacted a son's most loving disobedience. He held himself for hours there, perfectly still.